This is the Oanda Podcast.
This is the Oanda Market Insights Podcast, talking to Oanda senior market analysts across the world. And today we're joined by Ed Moyer in New York. Good afternoon from London, Ed. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thank you for having me.
Now, your president, Joe Biden, is currently in Europe for talks with allies over the Russia and Ukraine situation. He's made some comments today about how NATO would respond if Russia used chemical weapons in Ukraine. He didn't actually specify how they would respond. This, of course, dominating our news at the moment, this war between Russia and Ukraine. And obviously, that's having a massive effect on economies and markets across the world. We'll talk about oil in a moment or two, but this is entering its second month now, and there's no end in sight, is there?
Unfortunately, no. I feel that we're starting to see the war is not going the way the Russians planned. And when we take a look at their military troop movements, they've been unable to continue to progress towards some key cities. And this is leaning, I think, everyone's expectation that you're probably going to see just a greater concentration towards that the eastern part where they have the Russian-backed separatists in that Donbas region. And that's where you're probably going to see, I think, this war is going to be ultimately decided on whether or not Ukraine is willing to give up some land. I think that, you know, we're probably going to continue to see a barrage of missile attacks. And this is going to be, there's, for the most part, no end in sight, it seems, even though you are hearing lots of, I think, analysts are talking that possibly we could see some major de-escalation within 2 to 3 months' time. That's very tough. That's a tough call to make. And I think that you're probably going to see that investors should be prepared that this could drag out a lot longer. And I think that you're probably going to see that the overall impact of this war is starting to be felt already. And I think that the spillover effect into some of the poorer countries is going to force, I think, a lot more as far as emerging markets. It's really going to send so many countries into deep recessions because they're unable to handle disruption to food and energy supplies. And you're probably going to see that's going to lead to, sadly, revolts. And you're probably going to see that there's going to be concerns that, political instability in some of those regions is going to grow. So I think we're entering a period where intensifying inflationary pressures, which is going to be felt by everyone. And I think there was some overly optimistic expectations that Europe was going to be able to handle a good amount of it. And with today's like German IFO data, sentiment for the German economy has collapsed. And, companies are, obviously expecting tough times. And I think that you're going to continue to see that uncertainty is really going to, it's ultimately going to start to weigh on sentiment. But when you take a look at what has happened with stock market prices here in the U.S., it's fascinating to see that, it seems that we've had more up days than down recently. And a lot of that is because there has been some still optimism that first quarter earnings are going to be strong, jobless claims lowest level since 1969. And you're continuing to see that there's expectations that the consumer still is going to be buying stuff and still will be vacationing, and there is expectations that these higher oil prices can still be stomached a little bit longer, but I think that you're probably going to see that the rally should be capped fairly soon. S&P 500, I'd be surprised if you were to see a substantial move above 4600, and right now I think that as we see the market start to price in more aggressive tightening by the Fed, it seems that a half point increase at the next meeting has been pretty much agreed upon by a lot of Fed speakers. Fed tightening, aggressive Fed tightening, is not necessarily a good equation for risky assets. So it'll eventually that should start to damper the mood, but I think right now we're continually still focused about geopolitics, and we'll still be headline driven for probably for some time.
Having said that, though, regarding the Fed maybe increasing by 50 basis points, you mentioned earlier the idea of, you know, recessions spreading around the world. If that was the case, and we did get earlier recessions than we first thought because of the crisis, could that not peg back the idea of higher and more interest rate rises over the next year or so?
And that's what everyone is has been fixated over. You know, today was, I think, you know, there's so many headlines that, you know, catch my attention. But when Fed swaps fully priced in 200 basis points of more tightening by year end, that's suggesting, you know, we're not going to have one supersized rate hike. We're not going to have two. We might even have an interim meeting rate hike. The inflation outlook is a giant question mark, and right now, it just everything suggests we're going to see greater price swings here, and probably this could get uglier, even more uglier than a lot of people are anticipating, and the risk for, you know, I think it's an interesting week because it's also quarter end, and there has been some exhaustion in that move in oil prices. I know we're going to talk about it, but I think that you know, the risk of a significantly higher move in oil is still there. Higher wheat prices is there. So many metals are going to probably see tighter inventories, and I think that you're just looking at an inflation fireball that is probably just going to get worse over these next few months, and that's going to force much more aggressive tightening. I think the Fed is going to be able to deliver bigger rate hikes than a lot of the counterparts in Europe because of where the economy is positioned. And that's why you're seeing a big move here for the dollar mostly.
And those massive spikes in inflation, very much a lot of them down to the price of energy going up, gas and oil. And oil this week, though, has been a very topsy-turvy concern. I'm looking at the latest numbers. Brent crude just short of 119, WTI just over 112. But it's been up and down all week, hasn't it?
It has been. It's been an exhausting week. I talked to energy reporters at Bloomberg and at S&P on a regular basis, and we were exhausted this morning. It is the amount of emphasis on geopolitics is, you know, obviously expected, but you're trying to track so many headlines, and right now it seems that there's a little bit of a pause in the headlines that are sending oil, that should send oil higher, but I think that you're probably going to see that there have been attacks to Saudi facilities. There has been no increased production from the U.S. There has been, you know, some demand destruction in Europe. There has been, I think, sentiment is weakening globally. You haven't seen greater lockdowns from China. So there's just all these cross currents right now. But it just seems that until we get more traction towards an EU ban on an embargo on Russian energy, you're not going to have that breakout move higher. And it seems that Iran nuclear talks, that's kind of falling into the back burner, you know, talks with Venezuela also. And for a lot of traders, you know, this is a probably still going to be a trade that, you know, you're going to buy on dips, and I think that we're going to have to get used to higher oil prices. The $100 level seems like it should be strong support. Inventories are just they keep getting drained, and I think why we're not much higher is because you're still seeing that the Chinese and also India is buying Russian energy at discounts. So until there's greater pressure upon those nations, or until we see something that really intensifies the pressure on Russia, you know, oil is going to be probably a very choppy trade. But I think we should get used to having oil prices be much higher.
And interestingly, Ed, a Russian lawmaker this week suggested that Russia could accept Bitcoin for oil payments. And now that's interesting on two sides, really, isn't it? It enables them to actually trade in their oil, but at the same time increases the need for Bitcoin across the world.
Very much so. That headline for me was it really made me chuckle, because you know I remember covering Russia's love-hate relationship with Bitcoin, and mostly remembering the hate part. It seems that these sanctions that have been delivered are crippling, and you're seeing that you need to see other options, other currency options, payment options for Russian goods, and this is one way of getting around it, and I think that you're probably going to see that the move did provide a little, that story did provide a little boost for Bitcoin, but it was nothing substantial that changed the consolidating pattern that Bitcoin has been stuck in, and then also too, we're seeing more interest in crypto, and I think there's one story too that Exxon Mobil is running a pilot program using some of their excess natural gas that they could use to power some crypto mining operations. So there's calls for more adoption, acceptance of using cryptos that's growing across the world, and I think that you're going to see there was a year ago there was talks that Exxon might be able to consider crypto for payment. That never really gained any traction, but I think that you're seeing, as these companies make commitments to crypto, eventually the payment path is going to be there. And even though it's an extremely volatile asset, because of what we're seeing with some fiat currencies, the ruble, the lira, the Argentinian peso, you're going to see a lot of people that are comfortable in dealing with Bitcoin, because it has that long-term belief that prices will still be much higher, just because of the finite supply of Bitcoin and the potential that you could see from cryptos going forward. So crypto is going to be an interesting trade. I think the 37,000 to 45,000, maybe 46 now, it should be the trading range that holds up. And I think when we see treasury yields continue to do what they're doing, that's not going to be good for risk appetite. So I think we're the 10-year treasury yield at 2.48. I'm impressed that Bitcoin is still doing as well as it has been, trading at 44,300 right now. But I can't imagine, if we're talking, the 10-year at, 260, that Bitcoin would have an easy path higher. So there's going to remain a lot of volatility, and right now a lot of the retail traders are just hodling right now. They're not making any changes. They're not aggressively buying. This is just buy and hold for a good amount of people. And I think there's still a big focus on trying to pile on those other blockchain crypto coins that might have better growth potential in the next year or two. So crypto is still driving tremendous volume, you'll probably see that when we're beyond these geopolitical stories, those will probably end up being another argument for investing in crypto. So Bitcoin should have more interest when we're beyond the war in Ukraine, but right now it's still an interesting trade as it's not falling apart just yet as treasury yields rise.
It is a very interesting economic legacy of this war that Bitcoin seems to be even more upfront in the news for a variety of reasons. And that is one of those historical legacies that you often find can happen as a result of war.
Very much so. And I think you're still going to have tremendous amount of money thrown into this space as people are not forgetting that smart contracts helping companies become much more efficient, fixing a lot of these payment systems that, you know, it's become more apparent given this crisis that there are so many ways we can improve the way globalization has gone. And well, in some cases, globalization might have peaked. But I think there's still going to be large parts that are going to benefit in this open communication. And cryptocurrencies are going to be a big part of that. And I think that you've had enough influential money that is committed to the space that eventually you'll see some real game-changing ideas come from it. And that's probably why this space is still going to garner a lot more attention going forward.
Very interesting. Okay, Ed, before we let you go and enjoy your weekend, what should we look out for over the next week or so? What stands out for you?
For me, there's that EU-China summit. That's going to be a big event. Obviously, we have the jobs report. There's OPEC Plus meetings. We have President Biden will provide his budget. European inflation is always an important one to watch. Let's test the will of the ECB and let's see how hot things get. We also get some earnings reports. It's going to be normally I don't talk about Lululemon with you, but hearing that the strength of the consumer, the outlook, how spending habits are, that's going to be key. Walgreens, Porsche, Bank of China also report. So there's a lot going on. I think that, we'll probably see that, inflation is going to be the focal point for a lot of traders. Rate decisions is pretty quiet. Thailand is expected to keep rates steady. There is a lot of central bank speak. Prime Minister Johnson will appear before the liaison committee. So there's lots of important speeches to watch. I'm not going to list all the Fed ones because there's just too many. But I think the main one for a lot of the macro traders, the Europe EU virtual summit with China's President Xi Jinping and Premier Li Keqiang is going to be important. And you'll probably also be paying attention to the UK lifting the cap on consumer utility bills. It's a busy week. Focused though predominantly on every development with the war in Ukraine, and also too interesting. We'll also see Hong Kong is expected to end some of their COVID restrictions. So we can't forget about COVID.
Absolutely not. Okay, Ed, thanks very much for joining us today. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
This is the Oanda Podcast.